webcasting to the world live the good news of God's righteousness for all humanity. This is the Gospel Revolution Radio Network. Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein Online. It's Hump Day, Wednesday, October 28th, 2009. The only last Wednesday, last Hump Day of October 2009 in the history of the world. Welcome in to this midweek edition of Glenn Klein Online. Glad to have you along to help you over the hump of the week. We are very pleased to be coming to you live from Tampa Bay, live from Houston, Texas, and live into wherever you are logging into tonight, and hopefully you are listening live and will get in early and often and participate in this webcast at 1-800-436-3260. That is the Glenn Klein Online toll-free hotline, 1-800-436-3260. It is Wednesday night. It is time to get with the program, all things gospel, all things good news, coming to you via the modern technological miracle known as the World Wide Web and the Internet. Although, according to our founder and president, Michael Williams, it is not a miracle because it is technologically and scientifically explainable. And so let's welcome on he who I just referred to, Mr. Michael Williams from beautiful Michael.
Glenn.
Michael, tonight is night one of the 2009 World Series, a great American tradition, the World Series.
Oh, yay.
Do you know who's playing?
The Cardinals and the Bills.
No. The Cardinals, although they are a football team as well, are also a baseball team. So, and, of course, the Buffalo Bills are a football team.
Ah.
And the World Series is a baseball event.
Oh, okay.
That is taking place in New York City as we speak. As the New York Yankees, evil empire.
I bet Ambergy's not listening to us.
No, Ambergy's listening. He doesn't care because his Cincinnati Reds have not won a World Series since 1990.
Ah, okay.
But the New York Yankees are taking on the Philadelphia Phillies. George Howell might be interested in that since he is the Pennsylvania boy that he is.
There
he's probably
go.
Pulling for the Phillies.
Yeah.
And so it's a great, great tradition of baseball. But it just goes to show you, beautiful humans, that you need to know nothing about sport in order to understand spirituality and the gospel, as we've often with our founder and leader. So how are you tonight?
I'm wonderful. It's been a good week. Nothing to complain about.
Good.
The weather, again, has been just marvelous in Houston.
I'm glad it's nice there. It is just frickin' humid as H-E double hockey sticks. Although I don't know if hell would be actually humid with all the fire.
It might be a little dry there.
It might be a
since
dry.
There's no water there.
Yeah, it might be dry.
Yeah, dry heat.
We have
okay,
nothing
though,
to
you
worry
know?
About since hell has been propagated by religion over the millennia as a completely fabricated and at the most a pagan Greek concept. That's one of the most amazing things is that so much of the Christian world, and I mean the vast majority, Michael, of the Christian world, have no clue at all that the whole concept of an everlasting punishment for the so-called wicked comes from Greek paganism. They reject paganism at every turn that they think, but their concept of a hell and then, of course, eternal reward for those that are so-called righteous through their own faith and their own acts is completely a concept of Greek paganism.
Yeah, Christianity's turned into, it's more Halloween and Christmas than it is the gospel. The pagan holidays that they would call them, they actually have adapted more of the theories of Halloween and the ghosts and the goblins and witches and demons. They've certainly embraced that and then the rest of it, it's Christmas, you know, but you know, Santa Claus is coming to town, and you know, he's been watching to see who's naughty or nice. So you know, Santa Claus is coming back, Jesus is coming back, and the Easter Bunny comes bearing gifts. So it's pretty Christian out there, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's really remarkable. You know, we joke about checking the list to see who's been naughty or nice, but that is exactly the Santa Claus like Jesus Christ that the church has provided for. And speaking of Greek paganism, the Roman Catholic Church, that is the one that started the whole concept rolling of incorporating some sort of faith in Christ with their pagan Roman beliefs, their Greek beliefs, came out with a thing this week that is absolutely remarkable, and we wanted to talk to you about it tonight. This is coming directly from the London Telegraph, but in an unprecedented move, Pope Benedict XVI has opened the doors of the Roman Catholic Church to a growing number of Anglicans left disaffected by Canterbury's liberalism. Thousands of Anglicans have already left the church in response to its stance on homosexuality and female clergy. This historic move means that disillusioned Anglicans will be able to convert to Roman Catholicism while holding on to some of their religious doctrine rather than form small breakaway churches. While married Anglican pastors or priests, they're called fathers or called priests, will be able to become Catholic priests. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I said that. Married priests will be able to be Catholic priests married with children. And they will start a sitcom based on that. But, however, the Pope is drawing the line. They will not be allowed to become bishops. Once
well,
again, Michael, pointing out
somewhere.
The absolute lunacy and hypocrisy. I mean, here obviously the Pope and the Roman Catholic Church sees an open door, an opportunity to capitalize on these disaffected Anglicans who are upset that the Anglican Church is in favor of ordaining gays and women and want to leave and not be part of that kind of liberal interpretation of Christianity. So the Pope gets out there, and the Roman Catholic Church says, we'll take you in, we'll even take your priests, even if they're married. Can you imagine being a Roman Catholic priest, Michael, all these years, being a horn dog out there, forgetting about any kind of scandal, but let's say a priest that has stayed celibate all these years, but really, really, really wanted to get married, burned in his heart, as Paul talked about it and said, that if you do that, you ought get married, but not being allowed to because of church doctrine, and now because the Anglican Church has allowed for a evolution, if you will, of thought regarding things like gays and lesbians and women being a clergy. Now they're going to let the Anglican priests in and be married. I'd be pretty torqued off if I was them.
Well, it's the old, it's the age-old story. Your enemy is my enemy, therefore you are my friend. And so, you know, these people are rebelling against the progress of the human race that the Catholic Church is propagating. And, you know, they've got somebody there who's saying that they want them on their side, which that's great. You know, I hope every anti-gay group becomes Catholic, then we'll have them all in one place anyway. I mean, I hope the Pope opens the door for all of them, you know. So I wish it was that easy to resolve, but there's bigotry and hatred in every form around the planet. But, yeah, and who was the guy that was the it's only been about a year or so ago, I think, the Catholic prima donna priest that was Mr. Perfect Looking and Mr. Handsome, and he was always on TV and always talking with the teenagers about celibacy, and then they found that he was always meeting up with his girlfriend and got pictures of him on the beach. I can't remember his name. I don't know if you remember the incident or not.
The Catholic prima donna?
Yeah, he was like their prima donna. He's, you know, Mr. Catholic and just,
Mel
you know,
Gibson?
Tall. Huh?
Mel Gibson?
No. No, he's actually a priest. He was the priest that got caught with his girlfriend. But he's on TV a lot, and, you know, he preaches to young people. He was the top speaker for the Catholic Church on issues of against contraception and stuff like that, and then they found him with his girlfriend on the beach. And so,
was he a priest?
Yes, he is a priest.
All right, well, here, ladies and gentlemen, yeah. There are those of you that are listening live right now. We know that a lot of people are listening on the archive, but somebody is listening live right now and knows who Michael is talking about. We would like to hear from you at 1-800-436-3260. 1-800-436-3260. It's about 10 minutes after the top of the hour. If you're listening and it's a little after 9 o'clock on the East Coast, you're listening live. We want to hear from you, and perhaps you could either Google this answer or maybe you know who it is yourself. 1-800-436-3260. Sean O'Halloran is waiting to take your call, and we'll get you online post haste. So, regardless of who it is, although I am curious now. Are you kidding, Sean? Was that online? Did people hear you say that?
No, they can't hear me.
Oh, they can't hear you. Did you hear what he said, Michael?
Yeah.
Alberto
Cudi. Right.
Does that sound right?
Yes.
Yes. The guy's name was Cudi?
Yeah, and he was, too.
He was. He was a Cudi, huh?
Yep. Yes. In fact, I'm typing it in right now. But yeah, no, that was a big scandal. It's all on the news. I'm surprised you missed it.
Probably where I was at that moment. It's not so surprising that I missed it, but nonetheless. Michael, the thing is that the Protestant Church, whatever denomination you want to talk about, is just as guilty.
Absolutely.
You know, for decades or centuries. The Protestants embraced divorce as a cardinal sin in the same way as the Roman Catholic Church, but as the facts on the ground changed and divorce became much more socially acceptable and easily accessible by the public, there's so many preachers that have been divorced. I mean, Richard Roberts comes to mind, who's still on television praying for the miracles, talking about the necessity to walk in holiness in order to receive your healing from God. Paula and Randy White here in Tampa, who went through a divorce. Paula's still on television doing her thing, preaching that legalism BS. And yet nobody seems to question anymore the adherence to staying married, even though they continue to preach the efficacy and the importance of the so-called biblical marriage.
Yeah. Well, as long as you get a biblical divorce, I guess you're all right. But
you've taught on that so many times before, but why don't you rehearse for the beautiful humans some of the criteria for a biblical divorce?
Well, number one, you have to be a man who wants the divorce. And women...
Yeah, a woman can't get a biblical divorce, right?
No, there is no such thing as a biblical divorce for a woman. And actually there were several reasons that a man could put away his wife. There is no reasons that a woman can put away her husband. Not one time.
Because biblically, women were the property of men.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the Baptists really have it more right than anybody as far as that's concerned, but they are living in an old covenant. They certainly are not preaching any new covenant when they talk about the submission of women. But even the Baptists don't, say that women are excluded from being able to get a divorce. However, they highly frown on it, I suppose, especially if a woman pursues a divorce, because she wouldn't be getting a divorce if she would just submit to her husband, you know, whatever it is that he has got problems with. I remember those. I remember one of the things just became shockingly clear to me was women being told to stay with abusive husbands and,
Yeah, well, now the church makes exceptions that if your husband's abusive, it's okay to divorce him, even though that's not biblical.
It is not biblical at all.
Because even though the Bible talks about the husband treating the woman as the Lord would treat the church, of course, the Lord chastises his church.
Yeah.
And so the vast majority of Christian history, I mean, men were allowed to chastise their wives.
Yep.
But now, it's not socially acceptable to beat your wife in most quarters, thank God. But but they've made exceptions now. It's amazing how whatever religious dogma it is, whether it be the Mormon Church saying that blacks, as of 1964, 65, about the time of the Civil Rights Movement, and the civil rights legislation that happened in the United States, or we're talking about the Protestant churches that allow for ministers to continue even though they've been divorced, or now the Pope saying, come on, you can be a priest in the Catholic Church if you're an Anglican. It's amazing how as social and societal mores evolve that the church changes their mind about what was holy writ or holy doctrine.
Yeah, they still stay a step behind, several steps behind society, because the only moral ground they have is that they are, as far as society is concerned and the church is concerned, has nothing to do with scripture or biblical anymore, because the Catholic Church is, of course, far removed from anything biblical, even on moral grounds, as they can possibly be. As far as the perception of people that don't understand the gospel. So the only thing that they can really do to have any moral high ground is to just stay, you know, if you stay a couple of steps behind society, then, you know, we're okay. And, you know, when, you know, society was embracing people that were divorced, the Catholic Church was against it and didn't embrace those people at all, but then when the gay issue came up, they sure dropped off the fight against divorce and started attacking the gays. And, you know, as society goes along, inevitably these things will change with this organization also. And and anybody that thinks it won't is terribly wrong. History
well, they're ignoring historical precedent, for sure.
Absolutely.
As the conservative church was at the forefront of trying to sustain slavery and women being kept as second-class citizens in society. There was an Anglican priest of all places on the Stephen Colbert Report, for those of you that get that, on the Comedy Central. He was on last night, and he made a very powerful statement. He said, and of course Stephen Colbert is a comedian and is somebody who uses satire and sarcasm to make his point, but the Anglican priest, and you guys can Google that was just on yesterday, which was the 27th of October, to see that on Facebook or on YouTube. But he made a powerful point. He said that sin in the church is actually more of a social or conservative political statement than it is anything biblical.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the closest thing I've ever heard someone from any organized religion describe sin in its truest form, because that is the only thing that we have left anymore because of the gospel. The only thing that we have left of sin is what we define it as on a social and a political level. And that really was a remarkable statement to me. Now, I know that anybody that was a part of any church that had any moorings to the Bible just were outraged by that. But it was amazing to me that someone could come up with such a definition, and whether, what degree he understands the gospel or not, I don't know. But certainly impressed me, that's for sure.
This is Glenn Klein Online. That's Michael Williams, Gospel Revolution. It is Webcast Wednesday. We are wanting your participation. And our weekly post did not get out before the webcast, but we know that there are people listening live right now across the globe. We want to hear from you tonight. We're asking for your participation. It adds so much to our understanding and to our inspiration for this hour-long program. We want to hear from you at 1-800-436-3260. We're asking you to call 1-800-436-3260. Please get involved in the show. It really, really contributes a lot when people pick up the phone. Sean O'Halloran waiting in studio. 1-800-436-3260. If you're listening on the archive, we'd love to hear from you via the email at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Let us hear from you with your comments or thoughts. webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Speaking of hearing from you, we want to give you an update on the fall pledge drive that has just been concluded. 21 days trying to raise the funds for the next 3 months of the Gospel Revolution, which includes the upcoming Gospel Revolution Convention in Houston. 2 weeks' time, we'll be gathering in Houston. There's still time for you to get involved and to participate in that. Just go to the GospelRevolution.com website, click on the information about the convention. It's all there. We're holding it again at the Marriott North at Greenpoint in beautiful Houston, Texas. You can call Michael directly with any questions. We would love to see some folks get on board here in the last couple of weeks. 281-955-1910 is Michael's direct home number. 281-955-1910. But regarding the pledge drive, we were attempting to get 30 people to participate in pledges, whether they be one-time gifts or monthly contributions. And to say that we're a little bit short of our $15,000 goal would be an understatement, Michael. And what do you have to say to the beautiful humans about still participating in that and realizing that there is a very definite need yet to be met?
Well, let's see. Is this where I start preaching that if they don't give, they're going to go to hell?
Well, at least not receive the financial blessing from heaven.
That's right. That you cut yourself off from God.
In the spirit realm, just hovering right above their heads and ready for a breakthrough.
As my friend Jim Richards, after he parted with me for actually having the audacity to say that the tithe was fulfilled, and he did a sermon soon after that, and he said, if you don't tithe, you might as well have a flag up over your house that says cursed. I never will forget that. That was his reaction to any acceptance that the tithe might be fulfilled. But no,
he must have still been in full-time ministry if he was saying that.
Oh, yes, he was. Yeah, he saw which side his bread was obviously buttered on, which and we obviously don't have the power to control anybody anymore with any promise or any threat or anything. So, but people were generous, the ones who could did participate. So we really, really do appreciate everyone who participated, and we had people who are monthly supporters already who contributed to the pledge drive, and And we did have quite a bit of a gap from where we left off to reaching the goal of 15,000. But, you know, one of the things I want to mention also is that, that is different about this time than has been for other times is that we were delayed in being able to get out our hard copy newsletter through the snail mail. And a lot of people who that don't necessarily keep up with the webcast get their notices of the pledge drive through the mail, and those have inadvertently have not even arrived there to most people's houses. So we're going to kind of hold the door open here because of that. For the final result of this particular pledge drive, and you know, see what happens as far as folks responding to the pledge drive, because like I say, they would not have been notified actually probably until in the first part of next week. So, but if you're listening and you still want to participate, we do welcome you to do that. It is definitely needed, and you guys have done an amazing job of supporting this gospel. So the only thing I really want to express to everybody, Glenn, is just gratitude. We're very, very grateful, and it's been an amazing, especially the last couple of years since we've been doing the pledge drives, that the financial picture has changed drastically from where we were. So overall, the pledge drives and the giving that has been done and the increase that has come through that from the people who are grateful to receive the gospel, and not just grateful, but they just want other people to hear it. And that is the biggest reason for people's willingness and desire to support this effort is that they really do want other people to hear. And that's why I do what I do. That's why Glenn does what he does. That's why Sean does what he does. You know, and there and many, many others, you know, who are involved in this gospel revolution. And it truly is a revolution, folks. Now, everybody and his brother has tried to pick up on the name, but when I first started declaring a revolution, there was none of those words were out there. In fact, people were kind of offended that I called it a revolution instead of a revival, and they questioned me about why do you call it a revolution, and they said that connotes some type of rebellion and anarchy, if you will, instead of revival. And so I was really grilled about that at the time. Of course, this has been many years ago. And my selection of the word revolution rather than a revival, and people look at the term revival as though it's even a biblical term, and it just isn't. So revolution was the term that I chose, and the term revival means to bring back to life again that which we have had in the past. And that's the reason I didn't call it a revival, Glenn, is because I wasn't trying to revive the dead horse. In fact, I called on the horse that was dying to die and to stay dead. And that this was a gospel revolution, a complete revolution of thought and understanding and experience of the gospel as I've been sharing it now for the better part of two decades. In fact, the first time I shared the gospel of peace, which is the root and the beginning of the gospel that I'm sharing now, was in 1983. So so it's been 26 years since I first shared the gospel of peace and stepped out on the limb. I will never forget. I was pastoring a church. I had a congregation of about 300 people. And I remember going weeks and weeks and weeks before I ever stood up to preach the gospel of peace. It had never been shared by any of my colleagues, for sure. No colleague of mine, no church that I knew of, had ever preached the gospel of peace to any awareness that I had. And there were no books. I went to the bookstore. I went to the Christian bookstore to find any book that would tell me the war is over. God declared peace with the human race 2,000 years ago. There is no judgment left that is coming yet. There is no hostility between God and man. There is no chastisement. There is no angry God. I looked for it, and it did not exist. So believe me, it was a revolution when I stood up in the church that I pastored, and I went very detailed into the scriptures, into Isaiah, and then went through the statements about the cross and in the New Testament, and followed up through that, and proved the gospel of peace. Proved it.
Did you have any idea at all at that time in 1983 what you were getting yourself into?
No, I knew that what I was doing. I mean, Glenn, you folks, you just have to understand what I went through to get to that point too. You don't know how many times I prayed. I prayed that God would show Oral Roberts the gospel of peace. I prayed that God would show Kenneth Copeland the gospel of peace. Everybody that had a voice, and that was my question. You know, when I had those questions, I don't anymore, but I used to pray and say, God, why? Why do I understand this? I don't have a voice. Please, please show somebody that's got a voice, so that people can experience this freedom from the concept of an angry God. Well, I waited. In fact, I had studied the gospel of peace for 5 years before I ever stood up and spoke it out of my mouth in 1983. I remember the service. I remember it well. I remember taking my first breath, and I remember almost collapsing at the end when the last words came out of my mouth. It was such a discharge from my being that I almost folded up on standing on the platform behind the pulpit when I finally got it all out of my mouth and out of my heart.
What was the response of your 300-person congregation?
It was very positive.
Yeah. It was initially, when you did share the message, and when you shared the message with people like the Copelands, you had an incredibly positive response, as did we down here in Tampa at our
absolutely.
Congregation. People came unglued.
Yes, absolutely. And it was a few years later that I started preaching the gospel of grace, and because the gospel of peace just naturally leads to the gospel of grace. It's just all there is to it. If there is no angry God, it leaves every question about Christianity up in the air. Suddenly things came back out of the box for question that I had no question about, Glenn.
I didn't
like questioning the word of faith doctrine or questioning anything about miracles or healing or the end times, that Jesus was coming back and that all of that was going to take place. I had no question about that. It was a resolved issue for me.
Right.
But the gospel of peace brought it all back to the forefront. But I adhered to the gospel of peace. The gospel of peace has been the rudder of this gospel ship ever since I started sharing it. And the one thing that I've never gotten away from, Glenn, and I have been battered from every side. I lost friends from every direction, affiliations from every direction, money from every direction, but I held firm to the rudder of the gospel of peace. I never gave in to all of the assaults from all the religious communities, from all of the areas. It didn't make any difference where they come from. I don't know what it was. I was so persuaded of the gospel of peace. And you got to understand, I had as high a respect for Kenneth and Gloria Copeland as anybody has ever had. And I remember when I was praying that God would reveal it to Kenneth Copeland, I kept hearing, and to me, I was hearing him say the gospel of peace, that God was always on your side, and God was in your favor, and blah, blah, blah. There were so many things that he would say. And then even he, and one by one, I would hear them make these anti-gospel of peace statements, and it would deflate me, but it also fueled me to keep going on. It was really bizarre because nothing anyone could say could deter me from the gospel of peace.
Mm-hmm.
And I held on to it like it was my only lifeline. In every realm, I held to the gospel of peace. And finally, Kenneth Copeland got up and talked about somebody tripping over a tape recorder and breaking their leg, and it was God's way. It was God doing it to get their attention. It's like, well, there's no gospel of peace there. Because I knew God didn't break anybody's leg. And that it was not a method by which God teaches. And so as this continued on, the rudder of this ship is the gospel of peace. I will go out of this life preaching the gospel of peace. I will always share the gospel of peace. I know that God is not angry. I know why God isn't angry at all. I understand it to the core of my being. It is the gospel. It's not a gospel. It is the gospel. It is called the gospel of peace. And it baffled me. The two things that the only two things that the Bible calls the gospel, and the Bible calls it the gospel of grace and the gospel of peace. And nobody was sharing anything about the gospel of peace or the gospel of grace. We were sharing what we thought was a gospel of faith. It wasn't the word of grace movement. It was the word of faith movement.
Right.
And we knew nothing about grace. Zero. I preached the word of faith doctrine. I was told by more preachers than you could ever believe that I was the next best and greatest word of faith preacher to be on tap. That Kenneth Copeland and the rest of these guys were going to have to move over because I preached it better than they did. And it was dynamic. It was insightful. It was everything that the Word of Faith movement is on steroids when I taught it. And
you could like really preach it too. I mean, you just didn't teach it. You could like get all excited, couldn't you?
Oh, I would. Yes, absolutely. You know, I'd get all Billy Graham on you. So.
More than Billy Graham. Actually
more than Billy Graham. I'd get almost Jesse Duplantis on you, I guess.
I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, I don't even know if I could conjure it up again.
It's been gone
so long. You know, I've done it a couple of times when I'm up teaching. I'd give people a little sample, and it just cracks them up. You know, I go through how I used to teach, and they just love it.
Can you gin it up a little bit for us?
I can't. I can't even think right now what it sounded like.
Yes, you could. Come on.
I can't. Sorry.
Start speaking in tongues and go into it. You can do it.
Yeah. Well, it ain't going to happen. So.
Oh, damn. Well, you know what? It might happen, folks, if you come to Houston
for
the Gospel Revolution
Amendment
20-09. It's all about Hebrews revealed and debunked.
Yeah.
Coming 2 weeks from tomorrow. Can't believe it. It's already here.
And it is
and
the book.
Somebody that we hope will be joining us from beautiful Spokane, Washington, the very lovely and talented Tressa Martin is online. Tressa!
Oh, yay.
Hello, Glenn.
How are you,
Tressa?
Michael. I'm doing pretty well.
Tressa, don't you want to hear Michael preach a little bit? Preach.
Well, yeah. But, you know, if he's just not in the mood, that's okay, too.
Oh, I don't even know what the mood is anymore.
That's just too gracious.
You've been out of it too long, huh?
I really have. It's really funny.
Michael, it's like riding a bicycle.
No, it isn't. Riding a bicycle is natural. What I preached and how I preached it was unnatural.
Did your voice get very loud when you preached?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Red-faced, loud, pacing back and forth like a wild animal.
Uh-huh. Do you know, Tressa, you know what hooping is?
Hooping. Is that
hooping.
What...
That's
I
like
think
what
I
Jimmy
know.
Swaggart, you know, the old Pentecostal preacher, Jimmy Swaggart, used to do it. I think he probably still does it. But he'd be like, Jesus, Jesus, Jesus
oh,
Christ
yeah.
at the cross. You know, when you get that.
Yeah.
Now, I never did that, Glenn. So
you
don't
you
go
never
moved,
Mikey?
That's
no,
really
I was considered very calm because I didn't do that. So
okay.
Yeah.
Well, that we're going to just trust God. That anointing will come over Michael one night, because that would be fun to listen to.
Yeah.
Just for giggles.
We could have an old-time revival.
An old-time revolution.
Yeah, there you go, revolution.
So what's going on
so
there
good to hear from you,
Spokane?
Well, see, we're going to have an election here in our county.
Yeah.
And one of the items on the ballot is, should we allow for same-sex marriage?
Uh-oh.
We've got, what's that?
I said, uh-oh.
We've got partnership, but now they want to extend it to marriage. And
right.
The thing I hear from most Christian camps is, oh, it's gonna nullify marriage, and it's gonna, you know, just make it less important. And I just think, well, you know, we've got 52% divorce rate, so I don't think it's gonna hurt it much more. But
yeah, nothing.
Just,
nothing can hurt marriage worse than marriage has. So.
Yeah. Exactly. It's the leading cause of divorce, I hear you say.
Yeah, that's right.
It is a fact.
You know,
yeah.
Tressa, 58% actually of first marriages end in divorce now
in
the United States. 58%.
Oh,
70% of second marriages end in divorce, and 90% of third marriages end in divorce.
Wow.
So I say if gay and lesbian people want to be as miserable as straight people, they should have the right to be it.
Well, yeah, why not?
Spread the misery.
What's that?
Michael says, spread the news, Tressa.
Oh, okay, yeah.
We're all for equal miserableness.
That's right. You know, I used to have this mentality of, well, what should a Christian response be to something like this? And now I just think, you know, I don't think in those terms anymore. More about words which are all redeemed, and what should a humanity kind of a response be?
Wow, what a novel concept. What should be a humane response to that
humane,
kind of question?
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's like the priest said, was it Anglican, Glenn, that was on?
Right.
Colbert?
Oh, yeah.
Just like his statement, I mean, I think it's, and that's what people have to realize, is that they want everything, the hyperbole is that they want everything done according to the scriptures and according to the law of God.
Right.
But nobody wants that.
No.
Yeah.
Nobody wants that. They don't even know what they're saying. They have a select few, they have five or six things on their list that they want to be the law of God, to be the law of the land. And in fact, there's only two of the Ten Commandments that are the law of the land right now, and no one would tolerate the rest of the Ten Commandments, the other eight commandments being the law of the land. They just wouldn't tolerate it. Nobody would.
Well, I would. I think that if people covet their neighbor's stuff, They should absolutely be thrown in prison and the key thrown away.
Why not? I tell you what, if you want your neighbor put in prison, just buy yourself a new car, and that's all it's going to say.
And if children are disrespectful to their mothers and fathers, they should absolutely be stoned to death.
Yes, allowed to live past the age 13. And, shellfish. We've got to.
That's right.
We certainly can't leave out the shellfish.
Isn't part of the Ten Commandments. Of course, a much better translation of Ten Commandments is the Ten Sayings. Because true biblical scholars and Hebrew scholars know that there weren't Ten Commandments, there were 613, which included no eating of shellfish nor pork.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I want everybody that's had ribs in the last month put to death.
Yeah.
Yeah. So nobody wants our country to adopt the Bible's laws for the laws of our land. It's like I say, it's just fluff. It's hyperbole. It's nonsensical.
It's magic. Is what it is.
It is. It's death. And so it is. We've got to come to a point in society where that we are as smart as you are, Tressa, and to be able to say, what's humane? Mm-hmm. You know, what is the humane thing to do? What is the human thing we should do? Not God thing. When you're taught that man is evil to the core, and is born that way, you see, we can't trust ourselves to come up with these good decisions. We've taught that we are evil from our birth. Unless we've been converted, we are still evil. And yet the most evil I've ever experienced personally has been, as far as the definition of what we call evil, has certainly been within the confines of the converted. So,
certainly the religious. I mean, there is no question that the most heinous and inhumane acts that have ever been perpetrated on the human species have been at the hands of people who call themselves followers of God, whether they be Jewish, Christian, or Muslim, without question.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it's given the gospel a bad name. You know, Christianity has given the gospel a bad, bad name. And that's what we're really trying to do, Tressa, is to recover the reputation of the gospel. Because the gospel has been tainted. The gospel has gotten a bad rap. The gospel has gotten a bad reputation from not the prostitutes on the street, not the homosexuals who want to get married. The gospel has been given a bad reputation by Christianity, and we intend to take its reputation back.
Yeah. It's almost like the mentality is we've got to protect God. You know, we've got to hold up his standard. We've got to do it, you know, and preserve our society from whatever they think it used to be or something. But,
I would love to know from these folks that talk about wanting to maintain the American heritage and the traditions of America, what part of things like slavery and segregation and women being in bondage and so much else of the corruption of the past that they want to go back to?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the fact of the matter is, with all the challenges that this society is facing, and it is plenty, the arc of human history continues to go forward and up. I mean, you cannot things, you know, have a cyclical effect and a cyclical in retrospect, things cycle, but if you look at a linear graph of what you would call human freedom and understanding, it continues to go up. And one of the things that is amazing, as bad as a rap, Michael, as the gospel has gotten because of Christianity, it seems like those that know the name of Jesus, he somehow doesn't get the blame. It's really amazing that there is a level of respect among even non-Christians for what they believe is the teaching of Jesus. Somehow that has continued to survive through all the garbage. It's the Bible that is discredited. It is the church that is discredited. But somehow the man, Jesus Christ, continues to be deified and applauded, even amongst the most secular in our society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the strange thing about it is the thing they applaud is his teaching.
Yeah, because they don't understand his teaching.
Yeah. I mean, and I think his teaching should be applauded also, but for totally different reasons than
right.
The cultures and religions around this world applaud it, is that he was a good teacher.
Why should Jesus' teachings be applauded as opposed to what is usually taught as Jesus being a man of peace and a very giving and healing prophet? What is your take on why Jesus' teaching should be applauded?
Well, he did all of those things, that's for sure. But his teaching should be applauded because it should have been the very last teachings ever done on the law. He should have been the very last teacher of the law. The law was done away with by the man who taught the law the best and to its absolute accuracy. Jesus taught the law. On no turn did Jesus leave someone a loophole or a law to be able to do to find righteousness in the eyes of God. And Jesus took all hope that the law would ever help you or save you or redeem you. He took all that hope that people had in the law and totally dashed it to stone.
I hear Tressa laughing. See, somebody who understands grace and peace will find that joyful and humorous.
Right. Well, you said dash it, and I said trash it at the same time. So what do you suppose are, as citizens of the kingdom, so to speak, what do you think our role in society, government, you know, voting should be?
That's a great question. That's a great question, Tressa.
Well, our role should be very active, but we should be active letting everybody know that they are all a part of the kingdom of God, first off,
mm-hmm.
and that we are all the children of God. And our voting should be the most humane voting that is out there.
Yeah.
Now, there are people, whether they believe in the gospel or don't believe in the gospel, people are convinced of different forms of government, and people should be involved in what it is they are persuaded of, and that's the awesome thing about the gospel, is that we don't have to go around pretending that God is in a certain political party, or not in another party, which is definitely portrayed in our culture today. That one is of God and one is not of God.
Right.
And that is just such bunk. It's just unbelievable that we have to even listen to that. I think especially in our country, it's vitally important for people who understand the gospel, and it's important for everyone to understand, this is not a Christian nation. We are not founded on Christianity or on Christian principles. It is more founded on gospel principles because the gospel is freedom, not Christianity. But the issue of freedom is in our Constitution, but freedom is for everyone, and it is not dominated or ruled by any particular religion, especially Christianity. And it's in the trash heap of humanity as far as the politics of this world is where it should be with all of the other religions. Religion has always proved itself to be a deadly mixture with any type of any political view. It doesn't make any difference what it is. It's always a deadly, deadly mixture. So, yeah, we should be involved people, and if we're talking about just people who are of our persuasion of the gospel, of the completed work of the cross, you know, we should be involved in it. Because
and we should be on the side of freedom. We should be on the side of liberty. And obviously, that's going to be up to the interpretation of each individual person.
Absolutely.
But where there is an opportunity, as one studies politics and economics and litigation, the gospel informs one to promote liberty and freedom. This is why you had, because the founders of this country were all convinced of the importance of freeing themselves from a theological and system of monarchy that placed not only an individual, but individuals, plural, ahead of the masses. And the one thing that the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence does, it cuts through all that. And I'm talking about the Constitution amended, because obviously initially, even though the precepts were there that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, it took a while, and a civil war, and a civil rights movement, and a women's rights movement, and now a gay rights movement, to see that come to pass. But the principles were there. So if you're wondering, beautiful humans, what side politically you should take vis-a-vis the gospel, it would be our considered opinion that you should take the side of what produces the most freedom and the most liberty for its citizens from an intrusive religious system that has made its way into our government. That, you know, you talk about, Tressa, the whole concept of marriage. The government should not be in the business, in our humble opinion, of sanctioning a religious doctrine which is one man, one woman for marriage. The government
right.
should have nothing to do with that. Certainly not the federal government.
Yeah.
And that's what we've seen throughout history. And now that we've had freedom infused into our relationships, any time that freedom is infused, Michael, into bondage, initially what you have is confusion and chaos. And we're right in the middle of that right now with marriage and with the so-called monogamous relationships in this country. We saw it happen when the Soviet Union collapsed and the chaos that ensued in the former Soviet Union. We saw it in our society after slavery was abolished. I mean, there was so much chaos amongst the former slaves and the slave owners, they didn't know what to do with themselves.
Yeah.
But over time, as freedom continues to be focused on and emphasized, somehow these things have a way of working themselves out in the midst of chaos, in the midst of tumult. Because ultimately, Michael, what God does when he brings freedom in is that he wants people to look to him as the righteous maker of all humanity and leveling the playing field for all people that are involved. It's a messy business. Why God did it this way, only God knows. And as Michael has quoted many times, why is the only question that blinds the eye. If you're focused and you focus on the question of why this has happened this way, you'll never be able to see right. But if you get past that issue, we know, Michael, that through the chaos, as freedom continues to make its way, you think about what was going on in the late 60s, in 1968, 69, with the assassination of Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy and the Vietnam War protests and the civil rights movement and the violence that ensued. I mean, it seemed like this society was coming literally apart at the seams. But freedom kept working its way through, even through Vietnam, even through Watergate, to the point where we're, you know, we're still hanging out. And I think we'll find that every time, as freedom is adhered to, as you said, especially by people who understand the gospel.
Yeah, we are making progress, that's for sure. And I'm very grateful for it.
Yeah, wouldn't it be such a hellish thing to have a Christian Taliban? Oh, my goodness.
Well, we have it.
Yeah.
We have a Christian Taliban. It's called the Evangelical Christian Movement.
Right.
It's just that our society won't put up anymore with keeping women under burqas, but and the rest of that craziness. But, I mean, you tune on any Christian television show or evangelical radio program, and you're going to find ministers on some level continuing to try to keep people under bondage, Michael, in order to have them respond to keep propagating their own personal ministries and financial situation.
Very true.
Tressa, we're looking forward to seeing you in Houston.
Oh, I'm hoping I can go. So far, I haven't been able to get the time off of work, so that's what
we're still rooting for you.
Okay.
We'll be praying and fasting, okay?
It's going to be fun.
I know, son. Okay. Well,
when do you think you'll know by?
Oh, there's just so much upheaval at work that it's just kind of crazy right now. So, I don't know. I'm still looking for maybe someone to take my days. It starts on a Thursday, right?
It starts Thursday, the 12th of November.
Right.
So you still got a couple of weeks.
We're rooting for you.
So if a person could just come to the weekend part, do you think that would be?
Oh, absolutely. There's the largest bulk of it we'll be doing like on the weekend, especially Friday night and Saturday and then Sunday.
Okay.
And frankly, Tressa, you know, the teaching's going to be wonderful, but it's just getting together with a group of people who understand this, it really is a tremendous event and a time you'll never forget. And that's the beauty of it. I mean, you can't imagine the experience and just the acceptance and the love and just how, for lack of a better term, unweird it is to be with people who understand that everybody that's in the room and that's in the hotel and that's in the city and that's in the country and the world are all the same in the sight of God. It's just an incredible time.
It is a blessed assurance.
Sounds good. Well, thanks for the
Tressa.
Chat.
Tressa, thanks for calling.
You bet. God
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
There's Tressa Martin, ladies and gentlemen, from beautiful Spokane, Washington. She was on for several minutes, solid 20 minutes, so maybe 25 minutes even. So we're going to give a few extra minutes here. Sean is still in studio. If anybody wants to get online, we'd love to hear from you at 1-800-436-3260. Now that line is available, 1-800-436-3260. Call quickly. We'd love to hear from you, but we only have a few more minutes left. 1-800-436-3260. We want to acknowledge for sure the gift of Sharon Kennedy that came in during the course of the week. Sharon emailed us, Michael, after the pledge drive was over. Not over, but after the webcast was over, and she made a contribution of $10 a month, which was awesome, and a pretty lucky email, which we'll get to at a later time. But thank you so much, Sharon. We really appreciate it.
Yes, we do. Thank you so much.
And also, Sharon and her husband, Benny, just celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
So speaking of marriage, way to get through 50 years of it. Congratulations.
Absolutely.
Something to be said for the staying power of certain individuals.
Absolutely.
So we'll wait a few more minutes here, Sean. 1-800-436-3260. If anybody is desirous of talking to Michael and being heard tonight, 1-800-436-3260. Okay. So there, Sean came right online there, and I don't know if you guys heard him, but we have our good buddy from Calgary online. We're so happy to hear from Vic Dobrev. And Vic!
Hey, Glenn. How are you doing?
Hey, doing wonderfully. We're very happy to hear from you. How are things up in beautiful Calgary?
Oh, they're always good. Calgary's a beautiful place.
Is it snowing yet?
Oh, we've had that. That's come and gone.
But it's coming again.
We've
right?
had our 20, minus 20 and all that stuff, you know, and now we're back to warm weather again.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
You guys
cold
are all excited.
The mountains are beautiful. This is like Colorado here.
The hockey season started.
This is like Colorado.
The hockey season started, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
Calgary Flames are doing well. Edmonton Oilers are doing well.
Good.
Yes, sir. And your
so
Tampa Bay
your
Lightning
email,
not doing too badly
about
either.
It at another time.
You ever get out to a game?
Now, but we appreciate it.
Absolutely.
See, the reason I was calling is I don't know if you had a chance to read my little email.
Yeah, that's what I just said. So, yeah, go ahead. We'd love to talk about it.
You know, this whole thing about church, like last week, I had someone on talked about church, and I can relate to all of that. You know, Debbie and I haven't gone to a church meeting that we felt comfortable in. You know, we come and go, and you always hear something. You know, and people just don't teach the gospel. It's so lacking. And then you hear some legalism and. But still, I think there's a place for it, and I guess that's my point. I still think there's a place for organization, you know, because there's such a need for this message to get out. And what I'm thinking, though, is that church should be a place where the gospel is taught, and once a person has been taught the gospel, to let them go into the world. So in other words, it's more of a coming and going of people rather than a permanent kind of a society, because that's what it, you know, in our culture, this is what it becomes. You know, you go to church and that's your community. Not that that's bad, but I think that the importance of, for example, a pastor is to pastor people in righteousness. In other words, get them taught and grounded in the gospel. And then send them out into the world. Just go. You know, you don't have to come back here every week. Just go and live your life. And this is the kind of thing that should be taught. But I'm just concerned that, you know, there should be a more formal kind of structure. So that this message can get out, like if we had a curriculum that we could teach in a home setting to people, you know, that could, you know, the basic principles that we talk about every Wednesday, like you mentioned last week, you know, the scripture, and that kind of thing, and the principle of the scripture being what Jesus taught it was, what scripture is, rather than, you know, the New Testament and the Old Testament, this is the Word of God, and all that confusion that brings. But all of these principles that you and Mike teach every week on Wednesdays, if this was formulated into some kind of a book, you know, where others could take that and teach it. Yeah, I
oh,
think that Paul, I mean, done. Paul talks a lot about church structure. And so I think there's something, some value in that, isn't there?
Well, I think there's certainly value in anybody of any particular persuasion being able to meet together to encourage each other and to learn. It doesn't make any difference what the subject is. You know, the interesting thing about Paul here, you know, and I have to say this, and that is that the interesting thing about Paul's teaching about church structure is completely subjective, because there's nothing in the scriptures about it. Paul was doing the best he could do to give advice for what they had and to organize the way they still viewed it. Of course, you got to realize they were just coming out of the most controlled religion on the face of the earth in Judaism, and the most structured religion on the face of the earth that had ever been before. And so I see, I don't know if Paul was simply trying to address the issues of the current situation, but I don't know. Now, I can't tell you it's not there, but I don't know of anything like just what you just brought up, Vic, the issue of what is Scripture, to where that in any means says anything about a church structure. So, and it doesn't mean that we can't take Paul's advice. I mean, because Paul at that time saw the need for the structure. However, for us to try to pattern it after Paul's teaching, I think would be a great mistake in our day and age. Now, it doesn't mean that
I agree. I agree. I'm looking for something different. I'm looking for a different structure. I'm looking for like a teaching place where a person can be taught.
And you know what? I tell you, if let me tell you what I would love to do. If I had my way in this, as far as providing that, I would love to have a building. I would love to have a place. I would like to live at that place. I would love to appeal to people to come from around the world. I would love to teach in that place.
Yeah.
And
well, I think that's a tremendous goal.
I would love to teach in it every day.
Well, if you had a curriculum, though, Mike, you know, chapter one, you know,
absolutely.
The gospel of grace and peace, chapter two, the scripture, chapter three, you know.
And then we can turn it over to other people to do that. And I think it'd be a great place not only for me to do it, but a place where we can develop that curriculum and to be able to get other people. Because my goal isn't to be the leader of the gang, and you guys all know that.
I understand that. I think our goal should be to teach.
Absolutely. And,
you know, so that other people can be set free in this beautiful gospel.
Absolutely. And I'm totally on board with you. It is having the wherewithal to get that done, and because I don't have it. I do not have the.
No.
I can fit within any structure and share this gospel. Anybody could ask me to come to the First Church of Satan, and I would be perfectly comfortable to get up and preach the gospel. I'm not going to feel uncomfortable any place that I'm asked to share this gospel. I will. Now, I believe there are people with organizational skills, and if you will, even giftings, if you will, that. We've got, but see, I can do what I do. And I have painfully learned over the years what I don't do. And I've learned it by attempting to do it. Now, why, as Glenn said, is the question I stopped asking years ago, but it was the one that I had for many years, is why do I have this ability or gift to teach? I accept it as a gift to teach. Because it certainly is outside of my abilities, my known abilities that I know that I have, and then not have anything else to underpin that itself. But see, I think that's just the way that we're supposed to be, because I think I need you, Vic, to do this. I need Glenn to do this. Glenn needs me to do what I do. You need me to do what I do.
Mike, I see you in that picture on the Gospel Revolution in front of this Rice University. I don't even know where Rice University is. I assume it's in Houston, but that's really what's needed here. Mike needs to be in a place of learning, a building, just like you say, any kind of building.
Right, but, you know, from a realistic standpoint, Vic, let's take a look. And now Michael has been very, very careful to articulate what's really in our heart about the gratitude we have for the people like yourself that participate in this thing and that give financially. But over the course of the 20-plus years that Michael has been teaching this, and certainly over the last, let's say, 10, 12 years that we've been just preaching the unadulterated gospel of God, the redemption of the world, the salvation of the world, the oneness of humanity. Michael has had scores of people, scores of extremely wealthy people, tell him personally that this message has dramatically not only changed their lives, but saved their lives, saved their marriages, saved their children. And from what? From bondage, from destruction, from all sorts of resulting emotional and social effects that legalism and religion brings on a person. And there's many people that are listening right now that understand exactly what I'm talking about and have said things to the effect of, if there is anything ever that I can do, that we can do for you. And we're talking in many cases about multi-millionaires that have contributed tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars to evangelical and word of faith movements.
Hundreds
of thousands. With the accompanying acknowledgement that comes from that. And here we are having appealed via the email. Soon people will get a hard copy newsletter requesting financial support. And again, I want to be very cautious to say that we are so grateful to folks that have given, and we've talked about this, you know, so many times, dozens of times, gifts of $1, $10, whatever it is. What we're looking for is participation. And all we're looking for is to raise $15,000 over 21 days. And we are tens of thousands of dollars short of just meeting the basic requirements to live. This is the reality that we deal with every day.
Yeah.
And so this is not to put or tamp down your idea and the concept, but this is just the reality that Michael and I live with every day. That here we make this effort on a worldwide basis. We have a virtual church meeting, if you will, every week. And most of the time, the vast majority of the time, even when we're looking for contributions, we spend most of the time talking about the gospel.
Right.
And here we are in a situation where we have not even close to the money to be able to afford to eat, let alone continue to propagate this message at an institution through a teaching. I cannot tell you the amount of times people have promised Michael to do something and have not done it. Now, this is not to put anybody under condemnation. I'm talking about a reality that we deal with that we don't understand, and that it seems like that when you preach a message of freedom and liberty, when the gospel first came into my life, and we had the church, and we had, it was a messianic congregation, we had Michael come and share with our group. We continued to have meetings. We went from a building, as the group dwindled, we went into our home, and eventually, we ended up, I think, when Michael taught the series on the redemption of the world, that three, at the time, cassette tape series that eventually went around the world. Michael, I think we had six people in the living room here.
Mm, that's right.
And that was out of the congregation that initially was hundreds of people. So, Mikey, what do you have to say? I mean, I want to be frank and completely open with people. But this is the reality that we have dealt with over these decades now.
Yeah.
And what do you make of that?
Well, I certainly know that the impact of the gospel, even out of poverty, has been powerful in people's lives. This is one of those areas that I don't even try anymore to make heads or tails of. I just don't. It is it's beyond comprehension, especially if I compare it to where I know that I was in the church. My goodness, I believed in what we were doing. I gave a home away. I gave a home away. I've given cars away. I've given myself. I know I have given more than tens of thousands of dollars into ministries and stuff like that. So, it really is just a it's something that I don't know even what to think about it. But I do know that the gospel is so powerful that even with no money, we've reached people around the world. And even with no funds, I've still been able to produce the cassettes. I remember when we first got the duplication ability for CDs. I had absolutely nobody to even help me with that, as technologically challenged as I am. And I was spending 17 hours a day tied to the computer trying to learn how to operate a piece of equipment that if somebody actually knew what they were doing, it would have taken no time at all. But I had to learn how to run a computer at the same time. And so it's just one of those realities. It is funding, for sure.
I mean, the reality is there are people that listen to this show, Vic, that are millionaires and that could cut a check for $100,000 or $200,000, never miss a meal. And then we could have the wherewithal to have, at the very least, the start of regular gatherings and an administrator that has the churches that are successful and the institutions that are successful, whether it be a religious organization, a charitable organization, a political organization, a business, at some point there is a successful administrator that comes along,
mm-hmm,
that is able to keep track and to keep organized. And frankly, Michael and I do not have that ability. We have certain talents and certain gifts to communicate and to entertain and to articulate and to write and things like that. But organizationally, we don't have it. That's just as blunt as I know how to say it. I wish I did. The times in my life that I've been successful in business, I've had administrators along with me. But if the finances aren't there, people have criticized us for asking for money over these 3-plus years of the webcast. And we started out the webcast not asking for anything for the first, 3 or 4 months. We barely even mentioned it. And guess how much money we got? Nothing. Zero. Zilch. Yeah, right. Not a freaking penny. Everything that we had was what we gave ourselves. When we started asking, we got criticism for asking, but some money came in and enough to be able to, as Michael said, really see things start to turn around. But the unfortunate thing in this life is that it costs money to do stuff. It costs money to reproduce and to create a book and a, what's the word?
Curriculum.
Not an itinerary, but...
curriculum.
A curriculum, like
yeah.
you're talking about. It takes
yeah.
money to literally print those things up. It takes an administrator to keep track. Everybody that has participated at any significant aspect of this effort has either done it voluntarily or has donated their own money.
So,
whether it be Michael or myself or Hazel or Tim Pruitt, our webmaster.
That's been amazing.
These are our people who have just given of their own time and effort and talents and their own money. So that's what we're looking at.
All right. Well, that's
perhaps there's somebody out there, and
yeah.
It would be awesome if there'd be somebody out there, and it obviously has happened in so many situations where you see universities, Christian universities, who make a donation, who give an honorarium, not an honorarium, but a, what's the word? I'm running out of words right now, which is very unusual for me. But they make a contribution to establish a institution. And that gets the ball rolling.
Right.
It's possible.
Yeah.
You know, I think that your not only acknowledgement, but desire to be part of that, you've articulated that tonight and have before. But we're dealing with a very real situation here.
Mm-hmm.
So Vic, having heard all that, and you know, I'm glad you brought up your email because we were going to talk about it on a future show. But you talked about having an institution. Hearing all of this, and having in your heart what's in there, what do you think about all this? What's going through your mind right now?
That's the whole idea about the whole thing about finances. I guess in order to establish something, I guess objectives, like, you know, the objectives of any organization, you have to establish an objective. Okay, the objective is to, like Jesus said, preach the gospel. Go out into all the world and preach the gospel. So that's still the objective. And so, and around that is an organization that has to be built. I don't think it's being too religious or anything like that to think of things in terms of organization.
Right.
And direction. And moving towards that direction. I think you guys have done a tremendous job over the last 3 years just in bringing the gospel to the awareness of people through this mechanism of the internet. But maybe we need to think about now just bringing it up a level and thinking, okay, you know, what we need next is an organization. And of course, like you say, there's finances involved. And put it out there. Put it out there that this is what we want to do. We want to establish something like this, something formal, something so that this can be propagated for our children, so that this will be there, so that there will be a curriculum that can be passed down. I know that's all here in the archives. But I guess that's what's going through my mind.
You know, Michael, it's amazing as I listen to Vic talk. In every case where there were established institutions, whether it be our congregation down here in the Tampa area or, dozens and dozens of instances where there were institutions, when the gospel came in, those institutions went away.
Well, look at Harvard. Harvard started off as a Christian school, didn't it? I mean, these places.
Yeah, but we're talking, Vic, literally, where there were institutions, even decent-sized congregations, where the gospel came in and completely destroyed the institution.
Because they didn't have, I don't think, if the objective is to build a huge congregation, then it will always fail. But if the objective is to teach the people the gospel, then it doesn't matter if you have just 12 people. If you have this little group of 12
yeah.
people, then these 12 people go out, and then they go out into their community, and they start talking up. Then they know these people that are then grounded in the gospel, and then they go out, and then they do their little thing. And it's what is your objective? Is our objective to, you know, build this huge congregation or a huge massive organization? I don't think so.
Well, and then that
objective
in that
is
very
to teach
same
these people.
In that very same case, Vic, what we're talking about is having very faithful alumni,
yes.
just like a university does.
Yes.
And we can only be as successful with a progressive learning center like that. We can only be as successful as our alumni reach back and help out.
Exactly.
And that's what we're losing. We are definitely losing the heart of our alumni. Now I don't know why. It's going to take somebody
because
smarter than I.
Because we're not somehow we're not keeping in touch with them and keeping in touch with us. Or I'm not quite sure what it is. But
well,
if you've been touched by this gospel, you cannot but in my mind cannot but want to. Want to help
just take our case there in Calgary. You know our support team that we had there in Calgary. And I was in contact with those people all the time. I still love them dearly. I haven't heard from them in 2 years. They don't show up for the meetings. They offer no support. And that's the way they want it. I don't know how to change that. So, but see, that same thing that has played out there in Calgary and the support team that we had there, that completely dissipated. And if it had not been for you coming along, we wouldn't have the organization that we have.
Michael and I have talked about this a lot, is that what we find is that there's a segment of the people that receive the gospel that at some point don't think that they need to be involved or need to even contemplate the gospel anymore. It seems like they just want to move on with their lives, which obviously, you know, they have a perfect right to do, but don't stay in touch, don't contribute anymore, and have articulated to us, Michael, in no uncertain terms, that they really don't want anything to do with it anymore.
Yeah, when they stop returning phone calls, there's nothing else you can do.
Yeah,
it's really wild. And it is. This is true in our situation, uniquely to this situation. And the one thing I really do appreciate about our conversation, and this especially this last half here with you, Vic, is that it brings to reality that our situation has a difficulty, seems to be naturally built into it, that we need to find a way to repair that, and I don't have it right now.
There are a certain segment of any institution, whether it be a Harvard. Do you know how many billions of dollars Harvard has available to it that they built over the centuries, the trust funds and whatnot?
Mm-hmm.
Institutions, whether they be public radio stations or other non-for-profits, they have people that literally put those institutions in their will.
Yeah.
To keep them going, and we're not exactly sure why. It's one of the major questions that we've talked about over the years, and even very recently, your email spurred on another conversation about it. Frankly, as to why there's a certain segment of people who say that they've been set free and they acknowledge the importance of the message that Michael has brought to their lives, that just go away, and literally to the point of won't return a phone call. We don't understand that. Maybe some people out there that are listening tonight have some insight, and you could share with us either by calling Michael directly at home at 281-955-1910. That's his home number. It's out there. It's on our emails and on the newsletter, 281-955-1910. Or you can email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com with your thoughts and comments. We very much appreciate it. And, you know, frankly, Vic, in circles like this, whether it be a church or a ministry or a non-for-profit, you don't hear discussions like this usually. And we're just being as blunt and as open as we can about it. And, you know, I'm sure folks hear a little bit of frustration in our voices, and that's there. But ultimately, we are here only to share the gospel. I mean, we'd like to have it penetrate our society and penetrate the planet on a more effective basis. We think what's out there now will be there long after we're gone, but we would love to see an institution or a center of, as Michael said, a progressive understanding of this thing that is more organized and more together. But we need people's help. We are doing everything we know how to do ourselves. And your contribution up there in Calgary is incredibly invaluable and appreciated. And, you know, you understand, because you do it up there yourself, understand the amount of time and work and effort that it takes. We need more people, frankly, to be involved, both actively and financially. It's just it's nothing more simple than that.
The thing also, I hope that no one has any misconceptions about my commitment to this. You know, if I had the place and the time, I have the time. I've made sure that I keep my time to where that I get to do what I love to do the most. And I mean, if I stayed chained to a platform to stay there and nobody do anything but bring me food occasionally, hose me down, you know, you just got to realize there is no such thing as a lack of willingness on my part to do anything in any form, in any structure, anywhere, at any time.
Well, you know, it's just it's
so
something
we're open
about,
to suggestions.
This is where we sing, "Oh, happy day."
For sure.
Oh,
Vic,
happy
is awesome
day.
Hearing from you tonight.
Hey, it's great talking to you.
Oh,
thank you so much.
Have a lovely week.
I don't know about you, but I got to get out of here.
All right.
Vic,
God bless you. I'll let you go.
Stay in touch with us, buddy. We love
you.
Hearing from you.
Bye,
Vic.
Love you,
guys.
Love you too, Vic.
Bye-bye.
There's Vic Dobrynin, ladies and gentlemen. Well, man, we may never have had a conversation like that online before.
Well, we did tonight.
We sure did. And it's archived for history, for posterity's sake. Well, we're well over. This was a pledge drive-like length webcast.
Yes.
All right, folks, well, let us hear from you this week about any of your thoughts, feelings, comments, contributions. Love to see some more of you folks at the second Gospel Revolution Convention coming into Houston. just got an email from Tom Tonsky in Ohio saying, is the word endowment?
Yes,
that's exactly the word I was looking for, Tom.
There you go.
We need a big endowment. Somebody
no place
to step
else.
Up. What?
I said, and that goes no place else. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom. That's exactly what we need. We need an endowment. Tom Tomsky, a great friend and supporter in Ohio and a lover of the gospel. You know, the thing that really stinks, Michael, is that we've got these wonderful people like Vic, like Tom Tomsky, like Tressa Martin, like Pep Washburn, like George Howell. I mean, there's so many people that love this gospel, that continue to participate in it and are involved both financially and physically and emotionally. But we need more. I mean, that's just the bottom line. That's just the truth. And one of the things that you folks know that we do not do is shy away from the truth. And you've heard over the course of the 3+ years that this webcast has been online, and it's just a little over 3 years. We started in October of 2006. You've heard frankness and honesty on every level. And we're just going to keep on keeping on. I mean, this thing ain't going away. Michael and I and so many folks like Vic have made a commitment out there. People around the world, I mean, you think about people not only in Canada, Michael, but all over the United States, Australia, Li Lao in Singapore. I mean, there are people all over the world that are committed. We just need more folks, and we need people who have been touched by this thing over the course of the last 20 years to get reconnected and to step up and fill in the gaps that we don't have right now.
It's very true.
Okay. Well, Sean O'Halloran has stayed late, which we much appreciate. Speaking about a guy who understands the gospel and is committed to it, want to thank him for producing and engineering and call screening this extravaganza. We're going to do it again next week in November. It is the month of the convention. Let us hear from you this week. If you want to participate in the convention or if you've got anything that you can contribute, comments, thoughts, finances, whatever it is, let us hear from you this week at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Thank you so much for participating. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, this is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!